After such a wonderful passage, one feels like just sitting, staying quiet. He fell down at her feet, unconscious, prone. So, originally this is the subject for today, but also we have thought about questions people may be having over a period of time, so we can also merge it with question and answers to open a wider space. It's understood that questions, any question can be there under the sun or beyond. So, but first we will touch upon this subject briefly. It's an interesting and important subject and a most difficult one, harmony. Regarding collective harmony, the mother gave a one-line reply, only the divine can realize it. But in this, there is a clue also. Sri Aurobindo gives another clue, same clue but in a different way. When Nalinida asked him, how to create harmony? And he says, union in the mother. Very powerful. Harmony is an instinctive need of human nature. And the more we develop, the more this need becomes prominent. One of the signs of a sattvic nature is that it seeks for harmony. This how development proceeds. And the different ways people have tried to create harmony. One is where they do it by force of external law and rule. But that is order, that is not harmony. So rational societies try to create it by rule and order. That's at best can run for some time. Sri Aurobindo speaks of it in sattvic societies which once were there and there was order, but it breaks down because harmony is something which is much more internal, intrinsic. It allows for any amount of variation. This is one of the challenges, unity in diversity and not unity as uniformity. Then there are Rajasic societies which try to create harmony by some common interest through which people organize, come together, and then they are left free for their own life, whatever they want to do. And then there are Tamasic societies which try to create harmony by flattening everything. Everything is same, everything is equal. I'm not dwelling upon all this because this is a whole subject in its own right. Sri Aurobindo describes all this in, and each has its own problems, challenges, but let's come straight to the subject. And Sri Aurobindo gives a first clue. All this he describes in Jagannath Rath, the chariot of Jagannath. He says ancient Indian societies were like sattvic societies and modern Western society like a Rajasic society. And of course, the modern Indian society is like a Tamasic society. It refuses to move, refuses to change. And then he speaks about chariot of Jagannath, which is the image of how to realize the dream of mankind of unity, fraternity, liberty. All these together. When we stress on liberty, it is often at the expense of equality. If we stress on equality, it is often at the expense of liberty. So liberty, equality, freedom, unity, these are the four wheels of the chariot. He says, this is a dream, it has not been realized so far. And at the center of it is Jagannath, the Lord of the world. We read about the world soul. So it's a very interesting image to keep in mind. And for, I don't see my Bengali friend who was very happy to hear Bengali from me. So let me quote one of Tagore's poem about Jagannath Rath and why harmony tends to break. There you come, yes. Very timely, because I am going to quote something from Tagore in Bengali.
Oh my God.
Listen.
Yeah.
So as the poem goes, it's about Jagannath Rath. See, it's an annual Rath Yatra in which the chariot of Jagannath, the Lord of the worlds, he goes from his mother's house to his mausi. What is mausi? The maternal aunt's house. And as he goes, the king and the commoners and the menial, they're all pulling the chariot. Everybody. It's like God stepping out into the world. Normally you go to visit. Now it's God stepping into the world. And everybody is falling on the, you know, road to do pranam. Everybody is trying to have a glimpse. So as people fall to do pranam on the road, Tagore writes, Path bhave ami dev. Rath bhave ami dev. Dev bhave ami dev. Hase antaryami. The road thinks I am God because they are bowing to me. And the chariot thinks I am God, they are bowing to me. And the idol thinks I am God, they are bowing to me. And the indwelling universal in every heart is having a good laugh. So the secret of harmony in the truest sense, deepest sense, cannot be established until we discover the one divine self, which is one as well as universal. This is the Satyog. What is Satyog? When there is no external rule, no external law. In Satyog, everybody acts according to the truth as it manifests in their own heart. Now this too, we have an imitation of that. Do as you feel like. It's not that. It's the truth, the dharma manifesting in the heart. When that happens, there is Satyog, the age of gold. And then in Treta, it is the king who must hold the truth. And in Dwapar, there is rules, regulations, codification. And in Kaliyug, there is a complete breakdown for a new Satyog to emerge. So the secret is to discover the divine presence within. And this is very beautifully described, how to create harmony. But this is not easy. When Madhava was asked about Gnostic society, she says, forget about it. First, become a Gnostic individual. You talk about Gnostic society, you're not even a... You know, first we must discover the Gnostic being, the Gnostic individual. Then only we can talk about Gnostic society. Otherwise, we'll just be, you know, again, building things without really having any sense. So, first step is to discover the divine presence within. If we want to really build harmony, it cannot be built on the basis of a civilization valuing only the ego self and the desired self. That becomes the sattvic and trying to run rajasic societies. You cannot do it on that basis. But it's difficult. It's not easy. So what do we do till then? That's the question. At least to me that had been a question, that it's not easy to discover the divine presence. Few individuals here and there find, and they naturally understand things. And how do they understand things? Krishna is surely one with the divine self, and there is Kurukshetra. So what really it means, and these are the words that the line that flashed into my mind, and Shrinu speaks about it, how people should gather around. Of course, there is a similar sloka in the Rig Veda, Sangha Chattvam Sangman Padattvam Sango Vanasi Janata. Around the central fire, fire of aspiration. Buddha puts it in a very beautiful way. Shrinu puts it in something similar, but with, of course, change of little words. Since Buddha is rather well known, so he speaks of the community. What does he say? Buddham sharanam gacchami, Sangham sharanam gacchami, Dharmam sharanam gacchami. So we can have a narrow definition of Buddha as a person, or Buddha as a master consciousness, a being who liberates from ignorance. That's why the mother says, who will be the pioneers for the new race, for the supramental evolution? And this is a very interesting verse. It's written in Parishadvita in Human Cycle. The mother has also written it in her own works. You'll find it in both. Says, who will be the pioneer? Therefore, the people The individuals will be the pioneers, will be those who will stress only on the spiritual evolution, leaving the rest to work itself out. Spiritual conversion, evolution. So we can have again a narrow definition, understanding of Buddha, and a vast definition. Understanding Buddha, wherever mankind is being led towards awakening, towards something higher, more beautiful, deeper, there we can, freedom from ignorance of who we are, wherever this is happening, it is something very beautiful. Buddham Sharanam Gacchami. Then Sangham Sharanam Gacchami. And communities grow up around this idea, this great idea. In ancient India, there was no religions. And actually, it's much later that sects came in. Should we say there were ashrams of rishis?
And they were disciples in the ashram. And sometimes the gurus went and met each other to know, to widen their horizon. The whole Upanishad, Prashna Upanishad, is based on this. That six great masters, they go to another master, Pippala, then they ask him, there's something we don't know. Can you tell us? And he tells them one by one. He first tells them, you stay for 1 year. Let me see how much you have realized. We have another, even to Ashupati. Ashupati is actually a king. And there's a whole story, a yogi king. That meant some of these masters, I'm forgetting their names, probably Uddalak is one of them, or a couple of them who are known masters. They go to him. They say, we are masters in our own right, but there is something we don't know. Vaishwanar, what is that fire that has built the worlds? We don't know the secret. Because that secret is known only to the yogi who has lived in the world. So they go to Ashupati. And Ashupati tells them, rest for today. Tomorrow I'll tell you. And next day he asks them, what have you discovered? And they, each one describes his discovery. And Ashupati extends it a little more and takes it there. Just as Sri Aurobindo does. Without cancelling, negating, he takes it. Like, okay, yes, individuality is important. But what is individuality? It is not the ego individuality. He takes it deeper. Psychic beings' individuality. Freedom is important. But what is freedom? It's not freedom about licentiousness, doing whatever you feel like. It is the true freedom of the spirit. So, he's not negating, but taking it to its depth. Equality is important, but equality is not blurring of distinctions. Unity is important, but unity is not uniformity, but unity in diversity. So, Ashupati takes each one's discovery to the next level. So, we have the next step is Sangham. Sangham is a group of people who have united around a common uplifting ideal. If we have to have an ideal, because we have all kinds of ideals today, everything has been corrupted. That's the whole problem. The ideal of freedom has been corrupted. Uplifting ideal. Those who believe in the spiritual conversion of mankind, they don't care about fighting against this religion, that religion. It's irrelevant actually. Mankind has to evolve beyond religions and beyond ideologies. So, or if a religion evolves, wonderful. Because in every religion, the core is spiritual. So, Sangham. So in here, around a common uplifting ideal, this is a Sangham where we have come together. But again, in Sangham, people will have their own different things and ways, views. So the next is Dharmam Sharanam Gacchami. We may have different beliefs, different ways of life, fine. But Dharmam, this was so important. That's why we, core is Dharma. If you remove Dharma from the core, whatever action, karma is there, it will not be aligned to the right. It is, Dharma is core. And Dharma is not morality and ethics, though morality and ethics derives from it. Like when we say that, you know, you should good to others, be good to neighbors. Why? Because core of Dharma is that everybody has the same divine presence. So one must be good. Ahimsa, it derives from that core dharma that everybody carries the divine presence. But naturally it doesn't solve all the questions because when we fix this dharma into a standardized moral law, then problems arise. If everybody you have to be ahimsa, then divine presence in all. What do you do when terrorist enters your house? Or why your house? You are strong and capable and you see something which is unjust happening in the world. Should you just say it is the divine who is? That's why to understand Dharma was so important. dharmam sharanam. So the third level doesn't matter whatever beliefs and non-beliefs are. One may be atheist, agnostic, this, that, doesn't matter. But dharma is independent of all our beliefs and non-beliefs. So what is dharma? Dharma is all that helps in the unfolding of truth and carries us towards truth and light and freedom and immortality, the heights towards which man is supposed to climb. All that takes us towards that is dharma. As opposed to all that opposes it. For example, an extremely selfish life, a civilization which thrives on meanness and selfishness, is bound to one day or the other destroy itself. Why? Because it's built on adharma. Whatever we may do, because that's not dharma. Whereas crass ambition, whereas another civilization or a group of people or an individual who lives not just for himself. That's why the Gita says, what is a liberated person's actions? Why does he act? He doesn't have desires. So why will he act? His base is not desire but dharma. So how does he act according to dharma? Does he go preaching? Does he go and do the traditional rituals? He says no. That Shri Krishna has in the beginning itself removed. So he says, sarva bhuta hite rata. It's a very wide principle of action. He is ever engaged in doing good to people, to humanity, to its creatures, without any selfish considerations. That is dharma. So wherever there is dharma, that's how it is said, wherever there is dharma, there is Krishna, and wherever there is Krishna, there is vijay. Yatha dharmo tatha Krishna, yatha Krishna tato vijay. See, these are so profound. So harmony, if one discovered the divine presence, this is perfect. So basically a community which wants to grow in harmony should be basically dedicated to discovering the divine presence. And wherever we see, like in the ashram, Shurbindo gave and the mother gave a very wide leeway to everyone. But if he found somebody is extremely disturbing the community, then that time they would ask that please leave the ashram because this is not the place. Why? Because it's dedicated around discovering the divine presence. That is the secret. Then, if not Sangham, Sangham is held together not by the individual personality of the teacher, which is what first layer, second layer is the teachings, the great teachings. Sangham is held by the scripture, the teaching around which people harmonize themselves. So everything is fine, but the teaching, and the teaching again can be, as I said, very dogmatically understood or in its widest sense understood. And if we don't want to have both of these, then at least dharma. Dharma is universal, sanatan dharma. Dharma is in this whole creation. It is embedded in each atom of existence. That's why the atom unfolds in a certain way. That's why a seed grows into the tree it is intended to grow. So dharma is so important, because the other two may be difficult, but at least dharma. And dharma is all that lifts us towards the high, towards the sublime, towards the beautiful, towards the good. Satyam, Shivam, Sundaram. There is a very secular understanding of dharma. Satyam, Shivam, Sundaram. So that's dharma. And opposed to it is adharma. That which not only deviates from dharma, opposes dharma. So the question arises, can we harmonize with adharma? You can have this situation in society. They are facing this challenge everywhere. So can we do it? Well, we can try. Rama tried till the last minute. Ravan, you are on the path of adharma. Change your ways. It didn't work out. Why? Because behind the forces of adharma, they are very dark beings, asuric beings. We don't even have an idea. Falsehood, how it operates. Then let's not talk about them, because let's talk about divine. So Rama tried as an avatar, didn't work out. Buddha tried as an avatar, and the mother says even during his lifetime they were, you know, it had turned into a religion, Mahayana and Hinayana, who started opposing each other. And of course, Theravada Buddhism and all that came, and not going into its history. Then, Krishna tried till the last minute. He tells Duryodhan, just give 5 villages. I am not asking more. Pandav will be very happy. I wish I could recite those wonderful lines which are from the great poet Ramdhari Singh Dinkar. It's in Hindi. Maybe just 2 minutes I'll take. Let me recite. Shri Krishna goes and tells Duryodhan, just give 5 villages. He says, not even 5 needles of space I'll give. So one poet has captured this very beautifully. He says, Duryodhan, I can't translate, but some of us, I think, understand Hindi. We can enjoy it. Duryodhan yah bhi de na saka, aashish samaj ki le na saka, hari ne tab yon hunkar kiya, apna swarup vistar kiya. Then the Lord manifested in his resplendent form. We see in the Gita that form. Hari ne tab yon hunkar kiya, apna swarup vistar kiya. Dagmag, dagmag, diggaj dole. Bhagwan kupit hokar bole. Diggaj, all the powers that hold the quarters, they were shaken when the divine afflatus goes forth. And then the Lord spoke. What did he say? Yah dekh anal mujh mein le hai. Yah dekh pavan mujh mein le hai. Yah dekh gagan mujh mein le hai. See all the elements. They find refuge in me and from me they emerge. All that is required is for me to just withdraw my will for a moment and this soul creation will collapse. And then after that grand vision at the end, he tells Duryodhan, Veeron se pati hui bhu hai, yeh dekh yahan kisme tu hai. I am showing you the grand vision where all the dead are lying on the ground. You search where your corpse is lying. He shows that vision. Shobindu speaks of it in a different way, in a vision of science. So adharma is destined to collapse. Shobindu tried it. Shobindu tried it. What happened to Hitler and all this? So when we speak about harmony, harmony needs the divine center. It needs a center around which we can harmonize. Harmony is not like everything together in a waste paper basket and it'll harmonize somehow. It's thrown. Harmony is like the sky. So when we speak about wideness, there is a wideness of the waste paper basket where everything is torn and thrown. But the vastness of the sky where every star in its right place, rit chit, that's how it is. So harmony implies putting things in the right place. Yesterday, Vladimir, yesterday or day before, I don't remember, you said something very interesting and beautiful. Things not in their place, or perhaps Mukrand Bhai said. That's what is the cause of evil. Things are not in their place. Who decides their place? Not me, not anyone. Dharma decides. Rit, the right place, right way in space and time. And when things are in their place, there is beautiful harmony. But great disorder is why things go out of their place. I don't want it there, I want it here. So you see. So we begin to grab, we begin to possess, we want to shift things forcibly according to my convenience. So the more selfish a society becomes, the more disharmony it is going to create. You can hold it on the surface by order, but this order will one day change into disorder because such is the law of things. Things will eventually reach where they should reach. So that's the basis of harmony, is to discover the center. And to just close this, because we'll have question answers, is that if the center is the ego and the desired self, we can forget about harmony. We can pack our bags either to nirvana or to wherever. But if the center is the divine center, then we'll go beyond all the differences, ideological, religion-wise, and all these things, because we'll discover that divine presence unfolding in its own way in everyone. But that does not mean pactizing with adharma. Pactizing with adharma is to help the society move toward disintegration. That's right, because lok sangrahart implies, carrying the march of civilization forward implies that forces that oppose it, You have to stand and put them in their place, because otherwise the whole society is going to go into disintegration. This is very relevant in today's times, because we see both. So there are those who want to create, build harmony, which is beautiful, on the basis of dharma, which is not religion but the unfolding of truth. But on the other hand, there are forces which oppose it. And this is how we have to discover the divine center within, the divine center of the world, which we just saw, read rather, the world mother unfolding this creation. And then we should align individual life and collective life along this divine will. This is the basis of harmony. Any other way is another pralaya, whether we like it or not. So if we don't want pralaya, mother has assured us there will be no pralaya, because apparently, why apparently, she has said so, supermind will bulldoze. It's a wrong way to put it. Everything into its place. It has its own way. My mother has said in so many words. She said, my child, it is truth consciousness. It's not going to act on the basis of our personal life's dislike. It is truth consciousness. It will force itself. That's why so much delay in bringing it down to earth, because it can pulverize if it's something enormous, tremendous. It's divine omnipotence and omniscience. The safety of mankind, the one safety of mankind, is to align itself with the divine will. And divine will in its new unfolding, because the other challenge of harmony is when something new enters the house. This is the other part which in Sri Aurobindo's yoga we face. So it's like, you know, when a man is alone and he gets married or she gets married, then you see harmony, challenge to harmony comes. And then when you have a child, another challenge, a new person has come, member has come. So they have to change a lot, otherwise you can't help it. So similarly, now you see, when this new thing comes, it becomes the center. And then things have to grow. So similarly, when a new element is introduced into creation, it meets resistance from the old world order, which was relevant at one point of time but is no more relevant today, or rather it has to now align itself to this new element. That's precisely what Mother said, in the eternity of becoming, each avatar is the forerunner of a more perfect future realization. But men have a tendency to deify the avatar of the past in opposition to the avatar of the future. Now that Sri Aurobindo has come, his message meets the same resistance as of those who preceded him. And yet, tomorrow will prove the truth of his teachings and his work will be done. So now we have a new element, the supramental. And it is going to realign things. And it will meet the resistance from the old world order, which was relevant at some point of time. It had its place, everything in the evolution. A child at 2 hits his mama and says, mama, you are cruel, I don't like you, is okay. But the child at 20 does it, then you say something has gone wrong with you. So there was a reason why the old order had religion, ideology, philosophy, all these things were there as part of the old world order. Now it is spiritual and the supramental, something greater, higher, vaster. So that task, I may close by saying that we are privileged to be receivers of this great work, Lok Sangrahart, to be monkeys and, you know, on this fighting with Rama with very little equipment. And this is a great privilege. And so we have to have that prayer of the mother. This is the really last part. Make of us. This is a prayer which students are supposed to learn in the ashram school. Make of us the hero warriors we aspire to become. May we fight successfully the great battle of the future, that is to be born against the past that seeks to endure, so that we may be ready to receive the new things and manifest them. So harmony is a constantly evolving process. Harmony is not, okay, say whatever I want to have harmony, so it's all right. That leads to adharma and disintegration. Truth is truth and not falsehood. Satyameva jayate nanritam. Satyena pantha vitato devyana. It is truth that wins and not falsehood. This is the prayer we read of in mother's voice, or rather heard. Supreme Lord, eternal truth, let us obey thee alone and live according to truth. Okay, this is just the harmony part. And now we can have questions of any kind from anywhere, maybe.
Thank you, Alokji. Any questions for Alok or comments?
Yes, please. There's a question there.
Thank you so much, Alokji. I think my question was more so based on, you mentioned like truth within and building that truth within. I wanted to kind of ask like, or clarify, how do you do that? And I think the second part is, and you touched on it briefly, was building unity and harmony in relationships, not just, you know, like marriage, but like sometimes mother and child. Yeah. As we get older, how do we build that harmony in that relationship, and especially when your values and preferences are different? Yes. Or your truth is different?
Okay, thank you for that question. First question is about the truth within, and that's why she repeatedly, mother reminds us, truth is not a dogma. Don't put it in a slot. People even quote mother and Sri Aurobindo. And there's a whole conversation of the mother, very humorous, where somebody tells her, cling to truth. You have said, and Sri Aurobindo has said, do not imagine that truth and falsehood can stay together. But there are people in the ashram who are falsehood, and mother laughs and says, everybody has their shibboleths. So somebody eating non-vegetarian food, the person says, he is in falsehood. No. Truth is a hard and strenuous conquest. As long as one has preferences, one doesn't find truth. As long as one is narrow, dogmatic, rigid, small, one cannot find truth. Truth is vast. That's how it is described. Vratam. Truth is not, she says it's very infinitely plastic in its unfolding. People would go to the mother, she will tell them something. Next day, she will say something very different. And they ask, mother, why did you change your opinion? She said, because I have no opinions. Actual instances, Amal Kiran speaks of it, that once he went and asked about, you know, some Savitri corrections. Mother literally shouted at him. I shouted his divine shout, okay, this is wonderful. I wish, you know, she could shout at us. It's a sign of closeness. You shout only at somebody whom you feel too close, ki he'll not misunderstand. That's the story of Amritda. Anyways, she said, who are you to correct? Do you, so many things. Then Amal Kiran said, no, there are portions he didn't revise, like the Book of Death. How do you know that he didn't mean to leave it just as it is unrevised? See, she broke all his ideas. How do you know that he didn't mean to? How do you know that the divine didn't mean to leave it like that? And those of us, many of us who have grown up in the Indian culture, we understand this, like Garuda. When Ram and Lakshman are in Nagpash, and Garuda is invited, please do something about it. How do you know that the Lord wants, does not want it this way? It says Leela. So, no preconceptions. Very important to be so, and that requires an inner quietude. And inner quietude requires solitude. Initially, even later, it's inner solitude, but to start with, solitude. So when the mind becomes quiet, it's freed from all these ideas, ideologies, those lenses it wears to understand reality. When it is freed from these conceptions and perceptions, which we carry as a baggage, I use the word as a doctor, we carry a janam jat, from childhood we carry a cataract in our eyes, given by parents, given by society. And she says, if you come to spiritual life, you have to be ready to let go of all these conceptions, mental, moral, religious, all these. Very difficult. They have been our navigating points at some point. Yes, they are useful if one is not in search of truth. They have their place. That's what we see with Arjun, his dilemma. As you said, relatives, my fellows, you are asking me to fight here. So all moral, mental conceptions collapse. And you should hang by nothing but the thread of faith. And then she says, your religion, your country, your family, everything lies here, the divine. Everything then reorganizes itself. So first is that quest. And that quest should not stop with, you know, we want the divine to, we pick up those things which seem to justify our standpoints. And quietly ignore all that does not seem to justify our standpoint. That's why the mother says, be careful, read everything that Sri Aurobindo and the mother have said. Then you will understand the general drift to what they are trying to say. Even today morning I had a little discussion with somebody who's, you know, you pick up one sentence and you start, you know. But there is equally opposite things. For instance, at one place, Sri Aurobindo says, I do not believe in propaganda except for politics and patent medicine. Now somebody had handed me over this once, not me, the person used to hand over to everybody. So I said, you know, Sri Aurobindo has written something else also. What is it? I said, Sri Aurobindo writes that even a thing like propaganda can become part of her work if it is done with the right attitude. So, you see, it's just the opposite. So it requires a great degree of wideness. Truth acts in a very plastic way to complete that story. So after some time, when this was, I think, 54 edition, then 72, then Amal Kiran goes and says, Mother, my thing is that I agree that everything Sri Aurobindo has written is correct. But, you know, some people, there are things which he may have had oversight. First time he said there's something he had told, to which Mother responded. But, you know, there are passages which there may have been a typological errors. He was dictating, somebody was noting it down, and you know, that way he explained. Mother simply smiled and said, yes, go ahead. So Champaklalji speaks of something very similar. He says there was a time when Mother would not like artificial flowers. Like is our human language. So when somebody came and gave artificial flowers, she would just put it aside. And then Champaklalji says, after a few, maybe a decade or couple of decades, when people brought artificial flowers, he would admire them and keep it. What was she admiring? The beauty. See, those artificial flowers were so strange. And he says, if I had gone out of the ashram at that point of time, I would develop this idea that artificial flowers are not good. You are not supposed to keep them. So yes, one has to draw preferences to discover truth and be ready to face all the oppositions, which includes misunderstandings. Why not? See, Meera was not understood. She was even thrown out of the palace because she didn't understand. Nobody understood what she is going on inside. She tried to communicate, but who could understand? She came from a different background. The husband was Shakta, and you know, they would... But she was Mato Savare Kirangraji. So it is a difficult conquest. And one should be armed with lot of patience, courage, because you have to undo, demolish your own construction. See how when Mother goes to Sri Aurobindo, sits at the feet, all the that cosmic philosophy, all that, you know, she says, all that demolished. So first step is to be free from all these conceptions, etc., that she says about psychic being discovery itself, individual truth, that you have to be in search of something which is independent of your circumstances of birth, your country in which you are, your social environment, all these things. This is first part. Then one day you discover it. And then the discovery is beautiful. It changes you. It's not something which is saying, do this, don't do this. It unfolds itself beautifully. The second part of the question is about relations. First thing, relatives are relatives. Don't make them absolute. Okay? So. And if I go back to the scriptures in which I have grown up, and Sanatana Dharma, Nothing was considered more important than truth. I'll give you examples. So there is the example of Nachiketa. 9-year-old boy. He tells his dad, when dad is giving cows, etc., who have been fully milked, which have grown old, to all the gods, he said, "Dad, you are not doing the right thing." "What do you mean? You are not doing the... You are giving this to the gods. This is not the way." He argues. And dad gets very angry. So he says, "Whom are you giving me?" And he gets very annoyed and says, "Go to death." And then you have the Kathopanishad. Satyakam Jabali. So Satyakam goes to enroll himself in the he wants that higher vidya, and that Gautam Rishi can give it. So he goes and says, "I want to learn the highest knowledge." He says, "Who's your dad?" He says, "I've never seen him." Goes back and asks his mom, "Who is my dad?" Now this is a story from Upanishad. She says, "You know, I have worked as a maid in several houses. I really don't know who is your dad." Look at the way she communicates. "But this I know, that you are my son." He goes and tells her. And what does the guru say? "Wonderful! A lady who can say this is of the highest order." She could have given any name. She tells honestly and truthfully, "I don't know who is your dad, really speaking." Many, many stories. This is what is Arjuna's dilemma. See, a lot of courage is required to be with truth. Lot of courage. Of course, this courage doesn't mean sword brandishing. Not that. Courage to be able to speak what is true and beautiful without, it doesn't mean we have to hurt and harm, but we should be able to communicate this inmost thing. About the age of truth, mother says, truth in speech, truth in action, truth in feelings. And we see that today's children are in a way getting turned toward that. They may not understand truth. They say that, "Well, I want to be honest to myself." And this is one of the first lessons we as adolescents learn, and it's so beautiful. "I want to be honest to myself. I don't want to lie to myself. I don't want to lie just to be pleasing." So people who want to please others, who want to look good, who have, you know, their own personal axis to grind. So one has to have the courage if one sincerely wants to live the true life. Again, I'm using the word sincerely, because otherwise all the ways of the world are there. People will get affected. They may like it, they may not like it. Yes, but you will always be in the books of the divine. There is something which mother said, it's something so beautiful. The context was, of course, interesting, because Dilip Kumar Roy, you know, he had a feeling that maybe I have not liked the mother, so tomorrow she may, you know, Sri Aurobindo is physically not there, she may ask me to leave or things like that. Obviously he didn't know who mother is. So one day when he is present, the mother says something, "You know, we are not here to please ourselves." "Okay, fine, understood." Then she says, "We are not here to please others. We are here to please Sri Aurobindo and do the will of the Lord." If you remember that, and it's very challenging, without a doubt. Arjun faced the challenge, went through it, and Gita was born and the victory came. Had he hesitated, Bhishma, Drona, his own teacher, preceptor, grandsire, his cousins, he wouldn't have been able to. And Vibhishan, people till date tell him, but Vibhishan stood by truth. So all this is, it's difficult, but that's how it is. With courage, if you remember that we are here to be one with the mother, all else comes later, then life becomes simple. People may think this way, that anyways people think everybody is crazy except themselves. Can't. You see, Sri Ramakrishna Paramahansa, when he was told that, you know, everybody calls that you are dharma pagal, you are mad in religion. So he says, everybody is pagal. Some are pagal after money, kamini kanchan, I am pagal after dharma. What difference? Everybody is mad. Some are mad after lust and wealth. I am mad after God. So it's okay. People will say. So one has to be very clear about that. You may be liked, disliked. We should not try to become popular. We should try to be only in what the divine will wants us to be. All great mystics have said this. This is not something new. That to learn to live with the will of God. That's what should matter. And in the end, a very practical advice. I'll just take that. You see, in Indian customs, some things are very interesting. They're everywhere, but you have something very beautiful here about husband-wife. So you take 7 rounds, no? Whose round you take? Fire. Center is what? Fire. What is fire? Aspiration, progress, divine will, that is fire. What happens after marriage? Husband says, I am at the center. Or the in-laws may say, I am at the center. What will happen? You cannot. This is fire. Seat of fire is fire. Keep that at the center. Even husband-wife, human relation. Center should be divine will as we perceive it. Rest is okay. There is life to offer everything and unite around everything. Wonderful. But at the center, mother gives the secret, it goes as on marriage, but it's not on marriage. It's about two people who stay together. She says, unite at different levels, that's perfect. But she says, the secret of a lasting union, at the center there is this fire which burns at the apex of the world and in the heart. To walk the same path to the same goal, hand in hand, at the same pace, this is the secret of a lasting union. Put the fire in the center, everything will be fine. Try to be in the center, you will burn badly. That's the ego. And we don't need to change others. If others are doing it, it's their problem. But we should try to align to the divine will. Okay. Yeah. Yes. This. Okay. Okay. Sorry. Yeah, we'll come to that.
We will come back. We just
have
a couple minutes here.
Alokji, I asked you that question yesterday outside, if you would answer that. Or should I remind that question again?
Yeah, can you just repeat the question, please?
Yeah, the question was that, you know, Sri Aurobindo passed away somewhere around 1950, right? So, we're talking about the evolution of the humanity. Yes. Can you explain that? Where have we reached in that path?
Yes.
So that we can understand more and where we'll be leading towards ourselves.
Yes, so thank you. I just wanted to repeat so that, you know, we all can understand the context. So the question is that after Sri Aurobindo's physical withdrawal and the mother's also, where do we stand on the crossroads of evolution? First, let's remove that part of withdrawal because it was never dependent on just their physical presence. They came to open a door, the supramental manifestation that is established. So now the process is independent. Yes, those who want to go through the mother, they are into the royal door. Wonderful. But there are who feel as a living presence. But still the supramental consciousness is active. I could give a whole talk on it. I have given talks on it. But first thing we must understand, evolution is not a straight line. Progress is not a straight line. Evolution goes through many ups and downs. In fact, it is described in the scriptures as every Satyug will have its miniature Kaliyug and vice versa. So just as individual progress, it has to touch every part. So there will be phases when you will see society is touching something which is nadir, rock bottom. Why does it touch it? Sri Aurobindo has explained very beautifully that because it has to touch those dark elements of creation which have to be given a time to change. Or they have to adapt. It is not evolution by its nature will not leave anything. It will give choices even to the darkest parts. That means there will be periods when darkness will be very prominent. Why? Because it is also being given a chance. And this will carry on. It is always like that. Preparation, leap. Preparation, leap. So if I see it like that, many things which have happened since 60s, 56 is the supramental manifestation, which are so beautifully aligned. And as I said, it's a whole talk, but I'll give you a few things. Man has started exploring his inner subjective spaces. First step, subjective age has begun. So he has revolted against the fixed social norms and forms in which he was trapped like a machine. So we had songs like "We Want No Education." And we see people began to, you know, explore. Subjective age exploration led to drugs. Again we see, strange. But what was the drugs? The need for an alternative experience. Mankind was looking for something. It was feeling stifled within the mechanized industrial society where there was no room or scope for self-exploration. Today, every child says, "I want to be myself." Agreed. It's still the ego self, but he has begun exploring. Maybe he is mistaking the vital for the true self, but he has begun to explore. People are getting freed from all that they receive from birth, whether it be religion, parental things, and it's very disheartening, disconcerting to parents. But hold on, the original parents are active. So, this is the second. Science has reached that point where it's entered into the occult. The day we speak about quantum world, we have entered into a new world altogether. We speak in a language which is like the Upanishads. Certainty, uncertainty walking together. Freedom and determinism walking together. So we have already, we see in science, it's declaring itself. Health. First time, you see, vaccines were given in 60s and later on, eradicated smallpox. Everybody took it like a cow. First time we see so much reaction. Why? People said, "Our health is in my hands. Let me try it out." What does it mean? That you don't govern my health. I have my own body immunity. Allow me to take care of that. That means it's turning towards one's own self. You can't control and govern. Now, of course, things are out. The forces, see how this action of truth is digging out and bringing out all the falsehoods within such a short time. Vaccine is just one case in point. And again, going into it will be a long thing. So people are responding, reacting to that. They say that, well, we want it. Democracy is a feeling, absolutely in line with truth. Dictatorship failed. Socialism and communism, all the rot has shown up. Democracies are failing. Mother spoke about it long back. She said, you know, it's a ball. Shurbindo once asked her, that this is in 60s. Huh? So Shurbindo leaving the physical and see his action, how it continues. So he tells mother, this ball has grown very old. You know, in cricket you change the ball. It should be changed. And the mother looks at it, says, yes, it needs to change. And she says, that ball is democracy. We have played long enough. Already people are speaking. It's ills. It was best in it at a point of time. And surely it is better than dictatorship. There is no doubt about it. But then there is something new. And again, I have given a whole talk on it, so I am not going to touch upon that. In the field of health, I said that, you know, health in your own hands, not drugs, but I want to empower myself. So alternate systems, methods, where people are exploring avenues where I can be the master of my own health. In psychology, already we see that meditation became a buzzword. At least when I was studying psychiatry, so suddenly the only page that attracted me was meditation helps. Says the yogi, and the scientists are listening. I'm not going into TM and all that now, but well, it's become cool to have a guru and to have a, you know, people are very happy. Okay, so if, okay, he has a guru. Otherwise, sometime back, you admire somebody, you have a guru and you are going for a retreat. Now it's cool to have a retreat and go there. There is an uprising of youth and women. So many women are sitting here 50 years back, 70 years back, anywhere in the world. I'm not talking of anywhere in the world. How women have... Who made them feel? We think of human instruments, but it has happened. Youth, they are, whatever way they understand truth, but they are not going to listen to authority of the ego. That's what mother said. Tell the ego your authority is gone. Schools, mother long back gave the term, no school, finally. She tried last school, future school. Finally they asked one more school. She said, no school, that's the name of our school. Education should be conterminous with life, just like what was Gurukul? It was organically growing. You went around, you saw things, you had a query, the teachers were there to answer you. Now people don't want to meet a teacher. They say all that information is with our AI. We don't want to meet you for this information. We want to meet you for wisdom. AI doesn't have wisdom, it has information. But I don't know what sense to make of this information. I want knowledge and I want wisdom. That's what a teacher is meant to become. So schools are undergoing a big change. I don't know about here. I'm sure it's happening here. It's happening in India in a very big way. Integral education, the word integral has come in. People are talking about it. People are talking about spiritual and religious, which many hardcore religious people are not very happy about. Even in India, they say, no, they are same. They are not same. So there is this word spiritual has come. Evolution. All these things. So many yoga ashrams and meditation centers are sprawling. Someone was mentioning Makarand Bhai, that there was one 9-11 and another 9-11 and 9-11 of Swami Vivekananda. We talk about that wonderful address. Do we know how he was treated? Nobody was ready to give him a place to speak. Why? Because, well, he is dressed in such a dress, who knows, you know. With great difficulty, there were some sympathizers, and that's why I asked Julian, please write the history of yoga in America, because it's so important for people to connect. How he met with resistance, and how they were people, their contribution, that he ultimately stood on the stage. And then he spoke, and he continues to speak, and his words reverberate in the minds of men. So that was Swami. Today, when a guru comes to America, even if he is not 1/10 of Swami Vivekananda, but if he has a saffron dress, he may look a little awkward, but he's welcomed. So you see, there is an opening towards new ideas, which is so important. People are already speaking about thoughts running a machine. Even hardcore atheists, Stephen Hawking, thought-driven machines. Why not Pushpak, thought-driven machine? Why not will-driven machine? So already many things have come and everything is helping. Let me put it like that. Even things which seem to oppose, it's helping. That's a vast subject. But many things are happening. And I could go on and on, which is very clearly an indication that a new age is not dawning, it has dawned. And it's, where is the change taking place? In the heart of children. But if we are looking for change, that they are not going to the mandirs and the churches, then that's not the place. They are going to be abandoned. There are some very hardcore fundamentalists who are still holding on to it. They are going to collapse. The march of time will, you know, bring it down. So this is what I see, and so many other things I see. Everything that is happening, geopolitically I could give a whole talk on that. Everything that is happening is aligning things eventually towards this new consciousness. And we will see this, like this 14 years people will be given choices. Then you will see another smooth phase. 14 years 2014 to 2028. Then you will see for another 20 years or 25 years, there will be a smooth, means apparently nothing much will happen. Then again a crisis. And then again, you know, people will be given choices. This may go on for 100, 200 years. What will happen then? Mother has spoken about it already. She says, then a time will come when those who have made the choices have said yes in their heart, they will be taken up into the new creation. Then there will be a layer of humanity which is not ready fully for the new creation, but will become a higher humanity which will become a stairway for evolution. Then there are people who are humanity which is very close to the animal kind. Eat, drink and be merry. Though animals do it in season, we do it out of season. This will collapse and get integrated with the animal world. And then the perverse section of humanity, she says, it will collapse and disappear. It's an abortive attempt at being human. She has foreseen all this. She is not saying how. But when it happens, obviously it will be very disturbing to many who want everything should be celebration. So this battle of the future which is going on, its end is certain. Each one who is on the path is realizing it, because they see within themselves how things change. And sooner or later we'll realize it in the level of countries, continents. She gave a message 52 years back. Men, countries, continents, the choice is imperative. Truth or the abyss. Okay, it's a very big subject. I have just compressed it. But I have a couple of talks on aroma on this subject in great length. Yes, somebody, I think here. Yeah. Yeah. So. Yeah. So maybe we can take just two last questions and I'll give two short answers. Problem is mine also. Yes. The answer should be yes or no, and I give a multiple choice.
Well,
all of the above, none of the above. Okay. Yes, sorry.
Many things actually were answered already, but for me the question is so many, if everybody has his own truth, his own satyam, and if you see the countries also, everybody will say, I am true, and how we can, in the today's time, that there can be more peace, or you said already,
it can happen,
but how can we as individuals happen to make it
quicker? So we all say my truth and our truth, and countries also say their truth. Problem is, there is a truth which knows what we mean when we use words. That's why the mother uses the word sincerity. With regard to UNO, she says, and after this message, she said, when people asked men, countries, continent, what does it mean? She said, right now there is a lot of hypocrisy in international relations. We say truth, but we know what is hidden in our heart. That the divine consciousness knows. So it's not what we say and proclaim. One of the first things that is going to go is hypocrisy that we see happening. It's not what we say, it's what we feel. That's why I said karma and dharma. Karma is saying, I stand for truth. Dharma is my motive. So if it is deviating from dharma, and in today's time it is very dangerous to deceive oneself, and the mother spoke of that. So we shouldn't worry about that. We should be more concerned about that. When I say that I stand for truth, do I really mean it? Or am I using truth as a bogey? And that's where the rub lies. So we should focus on this part, that within me, and then not to worry about others, because it's not a dogma anyways. Each one will evolve in their own way. America will have its own truth of its own soul expressing itself. India will express it in its own unique way. France in its own way. That's the danger of making one world state. Because if you do that, suddenly you will find that everything is flattened out. It's very dangerous ideology that there are no countries, no boundaries, there is only one government. Very, very dangerous and risky. Not at this point. Let everything evolve along their own lines. Come together, learn from each other and grow. That's what is happening today also, because world has become like that. And it will grow along those lines. But each country would have its own unique soul. It must stand for that. Discover its means and express it. That's why I feel, again, going back to that, that there is a need for those engaged with this yoga and genuinely good of America, they should look into what is the soul of America and what its expression should be. So, or any other country for that matter. So that's how alignment will take place, because this, our truth and the truth. It was Duryodhan's truth that I am right. Why did Yudhishthira has lost in the game? It's my kingdom. But the vision of truth is different. And if men don't align itself to that, then they are likely to ultimately at some point collapse. That's what I meant. It's a very brink through which we are, on which we are standing. This brink may be for 100 years, but it's a brink nevertheless. One last quick question. Yeah.
Okay, if we could keep it short, we do have Dr. Lodd in his team that has arrived.
Okay.
And so if it
so lastest, if there is any. Otherwise, we'll have in the...
Pardon?
Lastest, if there is any.
Lastest, thank you.
Otherwise, we'll have it in the evening.
So anything you want to share on Swadharma and Dharma?
Okay, so again, big subject. Very briefly, I'll answer. Dharma, as I said, is the unfolding of truth. Dharma comes from the root dhra, dori, axis. So this is an axis which is there in the world. That's why there is hope. There is hope because dharma never dies. It cannot die. Death of dharma means collapse of creation. Okay, that's why creation bounces back even after pralaya. So this is about dharma. But this unfolding will take place in each one in its own unique way. Because each one is at a different stage of evolution. You can't turn it into a dogma that everybody should not eat meat or everybody should eat meat. Everybody should fast or everybody should be glutton. You can't do it because in each one the unfolding will be different. So first thing, we must understand that truth is infinity and therefore it acts with an infinite plasticity in its unfolding. Then comes the word Swadharma. It applies to each individual. So what is Swadharma? A reflection of this truth. Within each one, it is there in the individual soul. But we can't contact the soul, so something of this soul afflatus reflects itself in the nature. So the closer we go to the soul, the more we discover our own Swadharma. So originally it was intended in part of the fourfold order of society. It is the dharma of the seeker of knowledge to seek knowledge. He can't be running after wealth. It is the dharma of the kshatriya to fight a battle for what is true and right, even if he dies in the process. Swadharmo nidhanam seya paradharma bhyava. So that's how is the dharma of the shudra to create beauty in matter. So each one has its own calling. Nowadays we use the word calling. Which you will study, your innate temperament, you will discover it. And then to live by that, even if it's not about success, failure, you may not succeed. That's not important. Swadharmo nidhanam shreya paradharma bhayavaha. It's better to die following your own dharma, but an alien dharma, it's perdition, perishing. So this is how one has to understand it, and to discover your own Swadharma, you have to see deep inside. The virus of ambition, desire, lust, greed for money, fears have all corrupted this Swadharma. So one has to keep them aside and look, what is it that I am meant for? Ask every day, what is the purpose of my existence? What is this that I am supposed to contribute in this great yagya, Vishwa yagya? And she will guide us. The quieter we will become, she will guide us. Okay. Thank you so much. We'll take a break.
Thank you.